session number 26548, Reel 7.
Mr. Rose, Reel 7. Now, you were telling me about the voyage out to Famagusta aboard the...
Empire Clyde, which was a troop ship. And we embarked in Liverpool and sailed to Famagusta. And the voyage was about 10 days. Of course, the entire regiment was on board, but there was a whole lot of other service personnel there as well. Air Force, a lot of Air Force personnel, officers and so forth for going to other units. and of course, wives and families. And the thing that I remember about it was the food was magnificent. It really was magnificent. And we were having sort of five-course lunches and ten-course dinners. And that was absolutely press class. It really was. Four subalterns in a cabin, which wasn't too bad. Beautiful weather. Sailed all the way to Cyprus in a flat calm. The Bay of Biscay was like a mill pond. And this leads me on to the lovely story of Tom Duncan, because he is the doctor. And crossing the Bay of Biscay, a soldier developed acute peritonitis. And so there had to be an appendix operation. Now, there's on board, there's a colonel RAMC and a major RAMC, the major being the ship's doctor. And he totally panicked, you see. And Tom said, well, look, I've done about 200 appendicectomies in the last 18 months as a registrar before I came in the army, so I don't have any problem. And he had, of course, proper little operating theatre and so forth. And he said it was rather enjoyable to carry out the operation, bossing this fool colonel and this major about. But the thing that I always remember is that he came up, having completed it, he arrives for his dinner and sits down, you know, and he says, oh, that's all gone fine, you know. He said, of course, you do realise, he said, that in 10 years' time, he said, the operation will have been performed, he said, down in the galley, he said, in a force 10 gale, using the cook's sharpest knife. And that was the sort of kind of sense of humour that he... And I'm quite sure that, you know, the operation gradually grew in significance as the years went by. But going back to the PT for a moment, as I said, the weather was beautiful, very hot. So by 7 o'clock in the morning, we were all delighted to be out of our cabins, up on the top deck. And the whole thing became enormous fun. The captain, Cox was his surname, I can't remember his Christian name, but Cox was his surname. And we literally used to go on sort of little mini assault courses and going up the mast and down the mast. And what was intended as a punishment actually turned out to be great fun. And then we arrive in Famagusta.
Now, what were your first impressions of Famagusta?
Hot, smelly, but from our point of view, when I say our 8th battery, we literally disembarked onto the dockside, got into large lorries, drove 20 miles out of Famagusta up, do you know what I mean by the panhandle, the long thin bit of Cyprus, driving up in that direction to a battery camp called Boghaz, B-O-G-H-A-Z. And there we are, 20 miles out into the wilderness, as it seemed to me, in Cyprus, on active service, with two-thirds of the population anti you. And there we are, bang in the middle of it, which came as a bit of a shock.
Now, can you describe the situation as you knew it or at the time? I mean, you might know more about it now than you did then, but what were you aware of what was going on in Cyprus at all?
Only in a general sort of sense. I didn't know as much about Cypriot history then as I subsequently found out. But we were basically, the briefing, insofar as we had a briefing, was that the Greeks were the ones, that the Turks were very much pro-British and the Greeks were very much anti-British. And so if you were going to go down and spend an evening in a married quarter, you used Turkish taxis rather than Greek taxis. And if you were going to, you could only go into Turkish bars and so forth. My regiment managed to change that because we ended up shooting dead two Turks after a couple of months, and then everybody seemed to be against us, but that's just the way it goes.
So how did the Greeks treat, I mean, how did the Greeks show themselves to be unfriendly, if you see what I mean? If they did, or perhaps they weren't given the chance to.
Well, you really didn't mingle with them, you see. I mean, you were basically confined to camp. You, as officers, we were allowed to go out and go down and spend the evening in a married quarter. The married officers, of course, they lived out in in the town. It was a odd sort of
setup.
In Famagusta. and
weren't they a bit vulnerable there?
Yes, well, exactly. But there was, with the notable exception of the two sergeant's wives of my regiment that were gunned down and killed in Famagusta, the Ioka never attacked the civilians. They never attacked the families. Now, what a soldier couldn't do was to go out in public with his wife and his children. As I say, until these two wives were shot dead in Famagusta.
Now, when did that happen? Was that later on?
That was later on. That was after I had come back to England.
Right. Yeah.
but up until then, the wives, the children went. Of course, there was English schools. The army ran schools for the children. But the women, the wives could go down into the town and they could shop and go to the market. But what they couldn't do is go with their husbands. and certainly not in uniform. I think there was probably a little bit of license. but they certainly couldn't go in uniform. And I mean, you did not go out into the country in uniform unless you were on duty, armed, and you know, a group of you.
Now, could you describe to me the Bogaz camp then, the sort of environs?
Oh, primitive.
Tell me about it.
Primitive. Tents. Tented camp. The officer's mess was a Nissen hut. Sergeant's mess was a Nissen hut.
What were the tents like? How many officers? What were they like?
I had a tent to myself as an officer. The soldiers would be four to a tent.
I thought you were sharing with this chap with the Jimmy Shand fixation.
Yes, but that was not in Bogaz. That was when we moved further up the panhandle. In Bogaz. Well, wait a minute, no, perhaps you're right. I don't honestly remember. I have a feeling that in Bogaz, and I have my own tent.
And what did you have in the tent? I mean, presumably you have your can you describe the kit you had, which is your officer's...
You had a bed. You had a locker alongside the bed with from memory, a couple of three drawers. You had a little kind of wardrobe, and that was about it. We had our own sort of showers. The officers, this is all round the Nissen hut, which is the officers' mess, and of course the toilets were the deep trench latrines. You know, and it was always said that the great game was to sit on it and use a stopwatch to time the, and you could tell the depths of the deep trench. The washing facilities were pretty primitive, but of course by this time it's high summer, so the shower I remember was just a great big tank of water, and you pull the string, and then you didn't have to bother to heat it because the water was warm anyway, because it's now high summer in Cyprus. But it was all very primitive, you know, and after the deluxe barracks in Dusseldorf, this was pretty primitive.
So when you got out there, I presume you got your guns, or some guns.
Yeah.
But we haven't actually talked much about the organisation of the troop and the guns, because you were handing them in when we were there.
Oh, of course, now you're issued.
They're actually...
Yes, no, we didn't have... when you talk about the guns, the 25 pounders, we didn't have any of those at Bogaz. Bogaz was a battery camp, which was focused entirely upon internal security.
So that was your role?
Yes, not doing any gunnery at all. We didn't have any. We didn't. The guns were all down in the main camp at Famagusta.
Just your battery.
Just the battery, with our vehicles, and of course the small arms, and the soldiers had FN rifles. The officers, we had 3.8 pistols. In practice, we all of us always took Sterlings, because the pistol is a useless weapon. The Sterling, as I say, was a nice weapon. You could fold the butt in, you could sit in your Land Rover with it in your lap, and it was altogether a...
Tell me about the internal security duties. What were they divided into? What exactly were you doing at Bogaz Camp?
At Bogaz Camp, we were a military force, if you like, in that battery camp, and our area covered quite a... from memory, I suppose our kind of patrolling area was 10, 15 miles each way, so you're talking about a circle with a diameter of 30 miles. And you were in the camp, and of course you were there to be able to turn out in strength if something serious happened. But you also patrolled, motor patrols, which used to be a Land Rover and a one-ton truck. and you would go out patrolling.
Tell me about, did you go on mobile patrols?
Oh, well, yes, very much so.
Tell me what one of these patrols would be. So how would it be organised? So you've got the Land Rover, you've got a truck. Who would be in what?
In the Land Rover, you would have a driver. Sorry about my throat.
It's all right.
In the Land Rover, you would have the driver, wireless operator, and the officer. Usually an officer, although sometimes a sergeant, but usually junior officer. And then in the truck, the one-ton truck would have a driver. It would have usually a bombardier or a lance bombardier and half a dozen gunners, and that would be your patrol.
They'd be sat in the back there.
They, yes. Yeah, you'd have the driver and the bombardier in the front of the truck, and the half a dozen soldiers in the back.
Signalers?
No, the signaler was in the Land Rover. Yeah.
No second one.
Right? No. No.
How would you proceed? What was the plan?
Well, you just drove about, really. And in theory, dealt with any problem that arose, although, not much to be happened quite a lot of the time, I have to say.
And what were you looking for? I mean, did you know what you were looking for?
Well, just about. You did after a little while. For example... flying the Greek flag was forbidden, so if you saw somebody putting up a Greek flag, you'd go and arrest him. In fact, I don't ever remember seeing anybody flying a Greek flag. You'd see plenty of them about. They used to paint the slogans on the road, all in Greek, of course, which I've always assumed sort of said, go home, Britons, and Macarius forever sort of thing. You just literally used to wander about, I suppose, showing the flag as much as anything. But then, of course, you did have set operations, and then it all got a little bit more exciting.
During the patrols, were you ever fired on or attacked or in any way interfered with? The ones you were on?
I personally was never, I personally was never fired upon, ever drove over a landmine. But it was always the high level of risk, of course.
Were you nervous? I mean, in yourself?
initially, of course, because it was all so strange. But then I think you got used to it. And I think you got a bit blasé about it after a time. Having said that, there were some seriously scary times.
Now, when were they? Were they on the operations?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, let's go to that. That was from Bogaz, these operations, were they?
Yes. Now, the first operation, which we did as a regiment, and which we made a complete fist of, mainly because we'd only been there week 10 days, and then nobody quite knew what that. And I was, in hindsight, of course, I was also surprised how little training we had been given in what I call the basic internal security techniques, you know, riot squads, and this sort of thing.
You hadn't had any training at all. I was going to
Very skimpy. I mean, some man appeared about 3 days before we left Chiselden and said, "Well, of course you will have lots of instruction now about, you know, how to composition of riot squads and this sort of thing." We all looked at each other and said, "Nobody's told us about riot squads." It was all a bit. It was all a bit muddled, to my mind. But this particular operation, there is a little village called Ayios Theodoros. A-Y-I-O-S, Ayios, and then Theodoros, I think. And something had happened. There'd been an incident in the village. I think somebody being shot from memory, and we turn out as a regiment, and we sealed the village up for starters. And
now how did you do that?
Well, there's just one road that goes through the village, and it's on the main. It was on the main road going from Famagusta right up the Panhandle to whatever the place was called at the end of the Panhandle. It'll come to me in a minute. Rizzo Carpasso. Don't ask me to spell that. You'll have to work that one out yourself.
They can look.
so the village really straggles each side of the road, basically, with sort of little dirt roads. So the first thing, we had roadblocks at each end, and I was in charge of one roadblock. And David Swan, the other second lieutenant I mentioned, he's in charge of the roadblock at the other end.
Now, how did you establish a roadblock?
You barbed wire.
Not just a vehicle, then?
No. You had some barbed wire and I'm trying to remember. We must have had some kind of post or something, but certainly yes. We put a barricade across the road, and I'm there with I've got a bombardier, I suppose, and half a dozen soldiers.
Were you dug in, or were you just sitting
No. You had your vehicles off the side of the road, you let no vehicles go through without clearing that they were allowed to go through for whatever reason. Then what happened then was. Now, let me get this right. All I remember is that for some reason, the senior officers decided to arrest all the men in the village between, I don't know, 16 and sort of 60 or something. And I'm on this road with seven or eight soldiers. And suddenly all these men are being marched down the road, and they had this compound outside the village. And the women, of course, went absolutely ballistic. And of course, we realised subsequently, of course, that EOKA propaganda all the time was about the way the British Army were torturing all the men, you know, and all the terror. And these women see all their sons and husbands and brothers being marched off by hairy soldiers. And they came storming down the road, and some senior officer shouts at me, you know, "Hold them back, John," you see. And there am I with about eight soldiers across the road, and 300 screaming women coming at you. Well, needless to say, we failed totally. And I just said to my lads, I said, "Run for your lives." And we all take off down this village street, pursued by great screaming horde of women. And I remember the afterwards, a great leg-pulling of me, you know, that nobody realized how attractive I was to the ladies to be chased by 300. And the whole thing was a cock-up.
Now, where did the cock-up lie? The cock-up was the over-ambitious arrest of all the Greek males.
Yes. I mean, it was a stupid, provocative and silly thing to do, but it came from inexperience. I mean, you know, the great lesson learnt was is that you don't do things like that, or if you're going to arrest all the men, you jolly well have it all set up and everything in place to control it.
So they'd need a serious force to hold back the anticipated reaction of the women.
Yes, absolutely.
Not six or seven
men. Yeah, absolutely. And you know, the whole thing was a nonsense.
I presume they realised that the only way you could hold back the women would be to use force.
Yes.
rifle, Sten guns.
Oh, sure. Certainly. And who's going to start shooting women? You know. which leads on to another.
Well, who got the blame? I mean, was this your old colonel, the colonel?
Yes. Was he still there? He might have been just. Yes, I think he was still there.
But he was to blame.
Well,
you're not sure.
All I can say is that whoever made the decision, and I assume it was the colonel. It was a bad decision because as I say, it came from inexperience, but it was a bad decision and it caused a, happily nobody got shot. I don't think anybody actually got particularly injured. But the whole thing was a fairly unseemly, rather maladroit kind of operation, you know.
So what happened next? I mean, you were going on to say that.
Well, yes, and then... we did a month at Bogaz, and then we go back to base camp.
So that would be into July.
Yes. We do a month out there, then we go down to back to the main camp, which is in Famagusta.
Did that have a name?
Yes, it did. Karalis, which I think is Karalis. Something like Karolsos, something like that. Karalis camp. It had been the Jewish detention camp years previously, immediately post-war. And then another battery, I think it was 7-9 battery, goes out to Bogaz, and we're now back in the main camp, and we're doing a sort of more regimental things, a bit of gunnery training and so forth.
Now, before we go to that, what was this camp like? I mean, if it was just pretty well the same,
it was primitive. It was a tented tented camp.
So much the same as Bogaz.
Yes, but on a much larger scale, of course. But
were there other units there beside your
Yes, regiment? We shared it with the 1st Battalion of the Ulster Rifles, the 9th, God, what do they call it, Remy, 9th Workshop, Remy, and there was a squadron of the Blues and Royals, all each with a separate camp, but it was a kind of great big complex, if you see what I mean, you know, camps alongside each other. And we were doing a certain amount of a bit of gunnery now.
Tell me a bit about how your troop was organised gunnery-wise and what your, you know, we talked about it in training, but I mean, and I know you're not opening fire in anything like that, but how many guns to a troop, or how was it organised, and what was your role within it?
Well, I mean, we do a firing camp. We do a firing camp, and this...
Later on?
Yes, in the... about September time, from memory. But you, in a gun troop, you take the battery as the unit, really, and you have two gun troops, and each troop has four guns. So that's eight guns in the battery, four in each troop, and all of the kind of attendant, you know, the things to tow the guns. We had now got rid of the old tractor and limber, and we now had big 5-ton Bedford trucks with the gun hooked straight onto the truck, and all the supplies that would have been in the limber, in the old setup, in the back of the truck, which was, I think, more sensible arrangement. But of course, we were predominantly, although we were the garrison field regiment for the Middle East, and theoretically had an obligation to put a battery of field guns anywhere in the Middle East in 24 hours. I mean, that, you know, when I think about it, was laughable. We could no more have done that than get them on the moon.
Why not? What was the problem?
Well, because at any given moment, the whole regiment was scattered all over the landscape chasing Iorka bandits. Because although we were, as I say, the garrison field regiment, in fact, we had the biggest internal security area at that end of the island. And one of the reasons for that is because we had a lot more vehicles than your infantry battalions. We had a lot more vehicles, you see. So we could mount a lot more patrols, move people about.
So perhaps we'll leave the gunnery to the camp. But what about what were we actually doing there then? I mean, did the internal security role involve much going into Famagusta?
Yeah.
Street patrols.
Street patrols.
You went on street patrols.
Oh yeah.
What was a typical street patrol like?
usually you had about six or eight soldiers. You would have one NCO, usually a bombardier, last bombardier, and half a dozen soldiers. And you would be given an area to patrol, and you would just sort of patrol it, you know, in single file, spaced out, just going. I think it was mostly showing the flag. You didn't really do anything very often. I think it was more just to remind the population that they were, in effect, occupied and there were soldiers.
Would you go in single file down one pavement, down the side of the road, down the middle of the road, or do you see what I mean? Was there a specific way of going down the street? Were you trained in it? Because there are ways of doing this.
No, you see, we weren't. It was all a bit. I almost use the word amateurish. In hindsight, I think what it was, of course, there was an enormous number of units because trying to control Cyprus. There was over 30,000 British troops. I mean, the population's only 500,000. and I just don't think they ever got round to training them the half time.
So you just walked down the pavement or down the road? Or was it just not?
I seem to remember mostly going down the side of the road. We didn't do them very often. What we did more of was nighttime patrols.
I will come back. So when you went down in the day, you just... almost showing the flag, you just walk through, not looking for things, not doing anything like searching houses.
No.
Would you stop suspicious individuals?
Well, in theory, I have to say personally, and I think most of my brother officers, you just didn't notice. So,
so you weren't looking for trouble?
No.
Perhaps you should have been, but you weren't.
We weren't told to look for trouble. There was no culture of seriously going out and trying to, as Patton would say, kick ass, you know.
So you weren't going, actively searching out and seeking Iorka people amongst the civilians that surrounded you?
Not in these routine roles.
Would there be any antagonism directed at the patrol during the day as he walked down the street?
No, not a lot. I think the population were so used to it, I think they just ignored you.
So there's no spitting in the street?
No. Well, not that I was aware of.
And no demonstrations against the patrols?
Not on a daily basis, but you could do it. It usually needed some kind of event to trigger.
Which is perhaps why you didn't look for triggering.
Why you didn't go looking for trouble.
Did you ever have a daytime event triggered on a patrol? It sounds like
no. I had a very, very frightening experience in Nicosia.
We'll come to that. Yeah. I don't want to lead... it's me leading you on there. So,